I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program was brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country? For more information, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hello. Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd, not Ann Saxelby. Somehow, my special cheese song got lost, and we had Ann's song instead. This is a weekly cheese-centric show on heritageradionetwork.org, and this month's author interview is with Janet Fletcher, whose newest book, Cheese and Beer, we will be discussing today. Hello, Janet.
Hello, Diane.
How are you?
I'm fine here from sunny Napa Valley.
Oh, we're so jealous. It's the temperature's falling again in New York City.
Well, what can I say? It's probably going to hit 70 here today.
What can I say? That's torture. Well, as most of our listeners may know, Janet Fletcher is the author of many known and essential cheese books, notably The Cheese Course and Cheese and Wine. But today we will be discussing cheese and beer. Janet, you write for the San Francisco Chronicle, right? Is that a cheese gig?
Yes, it is. It's once a week. It's called the Cheese Course, and it runs in the food section on Sundays. And I've been doing it for about 12 years now. It's a lot of cheeses under my belt.
Oh, wow. And do you feature one cheese a week?
I do. That's the typical format. I profile something that I haven't written about before. So these days, it's often a cheese that's new in the market, a new import, or something new from our domestic producers, or it may be just a cheese I've somehow overlooked in the past dozen years.
Okay. So of the books I've reviewed in the past year for the author interview for this show, this one, Cheese and Beer, I think may have packed in the most staggering amount of new information for me as someone who has just recently discovered that I even like beer.
Well, that's a lovely compliment. I'm glad to hear that. And I think, you know, I've been surprised as I've been on the road promoting the book, how many people come up to me and say, cheese and beer? I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. And it's just the most, it's the most easy pairing. It's an easier pairing than cheese and wine.
Yeah. Now, what made you decide to do this book on beer? Were you approached as a cheese expert, or are you a beer lover? What was the story behind the book?
I am a beer lover. I consider myself far more knowledgeable about cheese than about beer, but this was an opportunity to learn. Mm-hmm. And I spotted a niche. Craft beer is booming, as you probably know, and artisan cheese is booming. Mm-hmm. And a woman came up to me at a book signing. I was signing copies of my book, Cheese and Wine, and she came up to me and she said that she was a home brewer, and she thought there was a market for a book on cheese and beer. And I thought, what a brilliant idea. Uh-huh. Of course there is, and nobody had done it. So I launched on a wonderful journey that continues to learn more about craft beer. Mm-hmm. It's, like any endeavor of that sort, it goes on for a lifetime. You never learn it all.
Right.
But I know so much more just by, I would say, concentrated tasting. I know so much more than I knew 3 years ago about beer, and it's fascinating.
I'm sure. What was your personal beer history?
Well, I think like somebody who's been involved in good food and wine for my whole career, mm-hmm. that I was always attuned to good beer. I never drank garbage beer.
Uh-huh.
I always drank like Anchor Steam, mm-hmm. our kind of our California benchmark craft beer, Anchor Steam or Sierra Nevada, good craft brews, but mm-hmm. I didn't experiment. Mm-hmm. I didn't branch out, and I really didn't understand all the different styles that there were. I loved IPAs, and I kept going back to IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
And the book really forced me to, led me to explore mm-hmm. the many, really limitless styles that there are in the beer world, and to try to classify them to help myself understand them and to help the reader understand the different styles of craft beer, because that's, for me, that's where it started, understanding the styles of beer
right.
That would help me choose cheeses for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was your favorite beer in college? Where did you start out beer-wise?
No, I don't know that I was paying that much attention in college, and I was, of course, underage. So, I can't really remember what I drank in college. I probably drank whatever somebody else was buying.
Okay.
But, early on, I learned to love beers that had flavor.
Okay.
Like, as I mentioned, Anchor Steam from mm-hmm. Anchor Brewing. That's what was one of the original beers to launch the craft brewing movement in this country. I still think it's absolutely delicious beer,
mm-hmm.
and come back to it. But there's so much more happening in the American craft beer world now.
Right. Did you have, initially as a cheese person, did you have a heavy preference for wine?
Well, yes, I would say I did. And one thing I noticed as I was writing these columns for the Chronicle, I noticed that I always recommend a beverage at the mm-hmm. end of the feature, and I was always recommending wine, very rarely recommending beer. And I had to be honest with myself and say one reason I didn't, because readers would say, "How come you don't recommend more beer?" And it was because I wasn't that comfortable with it. I
right.
wasn't comfortable that I had enough knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, now I would say I feel quite comfortable recommending beers with any cheese that's thrown at me. In fact, I have not yet found a cheese that I can't find a beer
right,
for, and
right.
I would say the same thing for wine.
In your column now, will you recommend both?
A lot more often. Sometimes both, but quite often I'm just recommending a beer that I think is great with a particular cheese,
okay.
or a couple of different styles of beer that will work with the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I just see the affinities.
It's more
so much
obvious.
More often now mm-hmm. than I did before, because I understand what's out there in the world of beer.
Mm-hmm. Did you have some beer epiphanies through your research? Shocking discoveries?
I started out thinking that I was an IPA drinker. Mm-hmm. IPAs, India Pale Ales, are very hoppy.
Mm-hmm.
They're bitter. I have a very dry palate. I like, I'm not a big dessert eater.
Mm-hmm.
I like savory, and I like bitter things like radicchio and endive. I mm-hmm. like bitter Campari. So it's not surprising that I like bitter beers. But what did surprise me was that I came to really love some of the maltier beer styles as well,
mm-hmm.
like porters and stouts,
mm-hmm.
and some of the malty Belgian beers, the doubles and the quads,
mm-hmm.
quadruples. They're very malty, and
mm-hmm.
I find huge affinities between these beers and a lot of aged cheeses.
Okay, so that's one. It seemed that an amazing amount of beer research must have gone on to gather the information for this book. How long did it take you? And what was your game plan in terms of approaching it?
Anytime you bring a kind of hot topic to a publisher, they want it yesterday.
Ah, so you're in a rush.
I didn't have as much time. I would have liked to have had 3 years to work on this book.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up having a year.
Uh-huh.
And I decided that I needed, because of that concentrated timeline, I needed a mentor. I
yes.
needed a tutor.
Mm-hmm.
So I found a wonderful man in San Francisco named Adam Dooley. He's a chef. But he's really a beer chef. He is a partner in two gastropubs in San Francisco. So I knew he was very knowledgeable about food and extremely knowledgeable about beer. And he took me under his wing, and I would meet with him a couple of times a week, and we would taste together. And he helped me. The main thing Adam did for me, well, he did two main things. He helped me understand how to group beers into styles and what the appropriate style categories would be. And then he introduced me to the benchmark beers in each category.
Mm-hmm.
So I really got to know what a classic Saison tastes like, what mm-hmm. a classic Belgian triple tastes like, who the best producers are. And that's just a great way to shape your palate.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Start with the best.
Right, right. Now, who helped you in terms of drinking? Did you also have to do your homework on the weekend and have parties?
Well, actually, my husband went along for the ride very happily. He's a winemaker. But
right.
That, I think, means that he's very, it gives him couple of advantages. He's really attuned to taste,
right.
You know, and to understanding what he's tasting. And he loves anything fermented. He loves just that process of taking something and fermenting it into something else. That's what he does every day. So
right.
Beer was fascinating to him, and we taste together. We still taste together.
Mm-hmm.
He comes home for lunch a lot, so we'll open a beer for lunch and discuss it. And
mm-hmm.
he's really kind of come along on the ride with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One problem I had in preparing for the interview was how to drink all these types of beer with cheese quickly, and especially the larger bottles. Many microbrews only seem to come in large bottles.
It's true. And
that can be a problem.
I think something that's really lacking is a way to seal them.
Yeah.
Because some of them are not only large bottles, but they're high in alcohol.
Yes.
So they are definitely too much for one person. They're really beers for sharing. And sometimes, you know, even we don't finish a whole bottle at lunch if it's
mm-hmm.
really high in alcohol. And we try to put like a champagne stopper on it.
Right.
And that keeps it good maybe from lunch to dinner.
Right.
But beyond that, it loses some of its fizz.
Mm-hmm.
And all these beer bottles are different shapes.
Mm-hmm.
So the typical champagne stopper doesn't work on all of them. But mm-hmm. it's a good thing to have one.
Right.
If you get into beer, you know, get yourself some of those champagne stoppers so that you can stop up a beer at least for a few hours until you're ready for another pour.
Right, right. Now, if you were having a small party to do some beer tasting, cheese tasting, how many beers and how many cheeses would you recommend?
Well, it's a little hard to say because it depends on what else is going on. Are you going to go out to dinner afterwards,
right.
or, you know, or is this the whole evening?
Mm-hmm.
I think of cheese, a typical portion of any cheese is being about a half an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
So especially in that kind of setting where you have a lot of different cheeses. So I would figure about a half an ounce per person of each cheese. And if people are going to be sampling a lot of different beers, then maybe a 2 ounce portion of each beer is
mm-hmm.
what I would figure, a 2 ounce pour.
Mm-hmm.
So you would get like 6 pours for a 12 ounce bottle.
Right. So a party for 6 people would be
too.
Good. Now, do people spit out beer like they spit out wine?
I certainly do.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm teaching a class, then I need to kind of stay on top of my game.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we're doing a lot of sampling at once.
Mm-hmm.
But, or judging, they
right.
definitely spit at judging,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, you know, most beer is not quite as high in alcohol as wine, so you can drink it a little more, you know, with a little less caution.
Right, right.
Yeah.
To me, I've discovered that beer seems to give you a different kind of feeling than wine.
Hmm. Well, I
is it the bubbles?
That.
Is
I mean,
it the
alcohol
bubbles?
Is alcohol. When you get to the same volume of alcohol,
uh-huh.
you do have the impact. But, you know, a lot of people say beer makes them feel full. It makes them feel so full.
Right,
and
right.
I think maybe they just drink it a little too fast. You know, it's something to sip and savor. The high alcohol beers are certainly not beers to guzzle.
Okay.
You drink them slowly.
Mm-hmm.
You drink them with food always. And just have respect for that alcohol, and I think you'll be fine.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Janet Fletcher discussing cheese and beer after the break. This is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd.
You're listening to Piece of Your Pie by Snowmine on heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 160 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hi, we're back with Janet Fletcher on Cutting the Curd, discussing cheese and beer. I'm Diane Stemple. Janet, I was wondering, as a total beer novice, I'm asking, are the categories you use in the book, which are 18 ale categories and 5 lager categories, are they always used? Are they set in stone?
Good question. For purposes of judging beer in competitions, there are recognized categories mm-hmm. that the industry uses. And there are many more than the ones I feature in the book. There's something like, 100 categories that might be used in competitions.
Okay.
But these days, a lot of the brewers, especially the American brewers, love to do things that are not in any category. They like to kind of push mm-hmm. the envelope
right.
and make something that hasn't been made before. So mm-hmm. they do a lot of, I would say, hybridization. They might make a black IPA, for example. That's not really an official category in judging competitions, but mm-hmm. they exist, these black IPAs. So the lines are getting blurred more as people experiment, but still the classic categories are the acknowledged ones that I use in my book and several more that are less common. What I chose, the, as you say, 23 that I think are the most
frequently
the most
used?
Common ones that okay. people will find okay. in a store.
But it's like in cheese where sometimes different people divide things up differently. Beer could be divided up differently also.
Yeah, I guess that's a good analogy. I mean, just yesterday I had a blue cheddar. I mean, you don't see too many blue cheddars, but a mm-hmm. cheddar maker decided he wanted to try getting some blue mold into his cheddar, and he's done that. That's mm-hmm. Dumbarton Blue from Wisconsin.
Right.
But I think it's a little harder to innovate and experiment with cheese
mm-hmm.
Than it is with beer.
Okay.
Beer is a little more freewheeling and a little more forgiving from a science perspective of your science experiments than cheese is.
Okay.
I mean, with cheese you can kill somebody.
Oh, okay. Beer, it's less likely. You don't kill people with beer.
Right.
How did you decide which to use? How did you narrow it down to 23? Were there some that you felt bad about leaving out?
Where Adam really helped me understand which were the most common categories, and the ones, and just looking at what's available in places like Whole Foods that have great beer selections, I just got to have a sense of what the most common categories are, and but I could easily have doubled it.
Maybe you can write the next book. Right.
Did that's you, my sequel.
Right. Did you favor a bit, it seemed from the names reading them, did you favor a bit the West Coast microbreweries because they were more accessible, or did you try to get the whole country in?
Well, I definitely tried to get the whole world in.
Oh, okay.
But there are definitely a lot of imported beers mentioned as well in the book and featured in the book. If it seems to you to have more of a West Coast slant, it's probably because those were the beers that are most available to me,
right,
living on the West Coast. But, you know, the cool thing about beer is that it is still quite regional. Craft beers often don't leave their region. So it's a fun opportunity for people to, you know, support their local brewers and get to know what's available in their area. It should... You know, for example, in a category like amber ales, there are great ones made all over the country. And if I mentioned West Coast ones in my book, it's just because those
what
are the
you
ones
drank.
That are most available to me. But they're made all over the country.
Are there regional beer differences? As I mean, not just where they're from, but taste wise.
Oh. Probably. I'm trying to think of some. You know, I think, for example, the Midwest has more of a Germanic tradition. They have more...
From their history and from...
The immigrant tradition.
Right,
so you probably are going to see more Pilsners and, you know, Bavarian-style beers in Michigan and Wisconsin, for sure, than you're going to see in California, where we don't have a large German immigrant population.
Now, can you talk a little bit about the differences between European and American beers, and if it's similar to differences in cheese?
Well, I think it's actually that's a good question. I think it's the similarity. Well, to back up a second, I think what I would say about European beers is that they tend to be a little more classic. They're not as experimental minded.
Okay.
They're
so
not
more traditional,
but they're much more rooted in tradition, and this is the beer that my grandfather, you know, made. And so they're not putting lemongrass in their beers and, you know, wild and crazy things like a lot of the American brewers are doing. That's changing a bit, but I think we can still count on the European beers to be more classically styled and less kind of wild and crazy. And I would say that's true of cheeses, too, because they have such a long cheese tradition, they're not as inclined to aim for something new and original as they are to make a really good Comté, a really good Tome de Savoie, like their parents and grandparents did.
So, and a particular...
You know, as you know, we see a lot of new cheeses coming in from Europe as well.
And a particular region in Europe might stick to a similar cheese or a similar beer over and over again, where in America it's less connected.
Yeah, I think that's true. And you find in the Pyrenees in France, they make basically one type of sheep's milk cheese. There's a little variation, but... the emphasis is not on newness and creation and originality. It's on just passing on a recipe that's pretty much perfected already.
Whereas
here, because it's so new, both our cheese making and our craft brewing is so new, there's a lot of playing around going on. And that's all to the good. And I think it will settle down somewhat as people figure out what they do well. And what consumers like, brewers will narrow down their styles probably.
Right, and there can be some bad experiments, flavor-wise, beer-wise.
There can. Yeah, I'm not, you know, I don't particularly care for cheese with a lot of herbs and spices in it. And I don't care for beers that have a lot of wacky spices in it. There's a, now, there is a long tradition in Belgium, especially, of seasoning beers with spices, with coriander and clove and orange peel. And those are very appealing beers. They're very subtle, typically. And when American brewers do the same thing and keep it subtle, those beers are delicious. But when you start to, the first thing you notice is the kaffir lime leaf. You know, to me, it's gone a little too far.
It can be heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Now, the concept of marriage or the pairing of beer and cheese or wine and cheese, how is the thinking different, the deciding what goes with what? Is it different with beer and cheese versus wine and cheese?
Well, what's similar is that you're looking usually for either complementary flavors and textures or contrast.
Okay.
So those are the that's where the pleasure is. And I would say that's true with wine as well.
Okay.
But with beer, you're playing with different factors. You have carbonation. You have hops, the bitterness of hops and the aroma of hops. And you have malt, which has a huge range of flavors, but it can be anywhere from kind of a biscuity toast to butterscotch or coffee. And so those are the flavors that I play with in beer. Using malt in the malty beers is a complement to cheeses that also have sort of buttery and nutty notes. And the hops, when I have a beer that's super hoppy, like IPA styles, I think tangy cheeses are a really nice complement. Tangy cheddars, tangy goat cheeses. They just love that acidity of that comes from hops.
So you're saying you think beer has more variables, more taste variables to match up.
I would say that's true. There's a bigger range of flavors.
That's
there are more ingredients than there are.
That's true. That's true.
You know, wine is just grapes and yeast, really.
It seemed to me in reading the book that there were many cheese recommendations for every style of beer. And would you say that's because beer is more friendly to cheese than wine?
Well, I definitely think that's true, that beer is an easier match for cheese. And so, yeah, with a single beer, oh, let's take... you know, a Saison, for example, that's one of my favorite styles. It's a Belgian style, S-A-I-S-O-N. But a lot of American producers are making Saisons now, and they're very versatile with cheese. So a lot of different kinds of cheeses can go with Saisons. They're very balanced beers. They're kind of medium alcohol. They have wonderful fruity, yeasty notes. They're not too malty, not too hoppy, but there's obvious elements of both. So they go with a wide range of cheeses. I particularly like them with bloomy rind cheeses, like Brie and, and Camembert style.
And that for when I first read that, it just, it's mentally rubbed me the wrong way. Though when I tried it, it was fine. It just seemed beer and bloomy rind in my brain didn't match.
Oh, well, sometimes your brain, you know, takes you in the right direction, and sometimes you're surprised.
Right,
you know,
right.
Sometimes,
right.
Theoretically, you think that's not going to work, and then you give it a try, and it does. You know, if you think of Saisons as, I think of them almost cider-like.
Oh,
because they can be quite fruity. So I think of them almost like apple cider, and there's no better match, really, than cider and Camembert. That's a classic French Normandy match. So having a Saison with a Camembert is equivalent for me, in a sense, to having a cider with a Camembert.
Now, for some other beer novices, what would you say two or three of the most easy-to-find Saison beers are in America?
Oh, well, one of my favorites would be the Brasserie DuPont, D-U-P-O-N-T. They make just, I would say, a benchmark Saison.
And where are they from?
And I love the another one that's probably available widely across the country is from North Coast. They're here in California, North Coast Brewing. They make a Saison called Le Merle, M-E-R-L-E, that is just one of my go-to beers. Oh, and Omegang in New York. Cooperstown. Omegang Hennepin.
Oh, okay. I've had that.
A fabulous Saison. There's a fellow in, I think he's in Virginia, but he calls himself a gypsy brewer in the sense that he doesn't have his own place and he goes around to other people's breweries and makes his beer. And his brand is called Stillwater. he's got a cult following, and every saison he specializes in saisons, and every saison I've had from Stillwater, I've really enjoyed. Mm. So that's one to look for.
Okay, great. Now, what do you think about the two industries, the artisanal cheese industry and the microbrewing industry? How do they compare? Are they both at a similar point in their development? Do you find similarities?
Yes, I do find similarities in that both industries are full of passionate people
mm-hmm.
who often started from scratch. They mm-hmm. are not inheriting a business. They're starting a business because they're passionate about the product. I think there should be a lot more working together because there's so many opportunities to cross-promote between mm-hmm. Specialty cheese and specialty beer craft brewing.
Mm-hmm.
They are a natural match, and I'd love to see the two industries working closer together to mm-hmm. promote each other's products.
That's a great idea because a lot of cheesemakers love drinking beer.
They do, and vice versa. I really have never met a brewer who didn't like cheese.
Okay.
So,
well, that's a great idea.
It's a natural match there, and they both have a lot to gain from promoting their products together.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, as I knew we would. I have a lot more questions maybe we can talk about next time we run across each other. I want to thank Janet Fletcher, who is the author of Cheese and Beer, and thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Diane. It's been fun.
Okay. And this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd at heritageradionetwork.org. It's a podcast on iTunes, and I want to thank my engineer, Evan DeVito.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Sachs.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.